telling us about Mary Dell and her work in just a few minutes. But first, I want to speak briefly about the award that we have chosen for Mary Dell, the new Lumen Vitae Award. Mary Dell will be the first recipient, and as a consequence, she will set the standards for future recipients. It's my opinion that we may have a problem finding a follower. So may I read the citation which describes the significance of this award? The College of St. Benedict's Award, Lumen Vitae, is to be given to persons who illuminate the lives of others through their own scholarship or artistry, teaching, or advocacy. Implied in that title, Light of Life, Lumen Vitae, is respectful acknowledgement and celebration of persons who work to find their own center, their own inner light. The greatness of such persons lies not only in their courageous struggle to find their own light, but that in attaining a certain clarity for themselves, their work brings about a similar clarity for others. Their greatness does not exploit others, but instead unites all people at an essentially human level. The words that we have in our English language that come from the Latin word lumen, illuminate, luminary, luminous, these words are an apt description of Mary Dell's work and what that work means to each of us who are here to share in honoring her tonight. Those of us who are familiar with any of Mary Dell's work know that it does indeed illuminate our own experience. For whatever insight we gain from ourselves or from each other is insight that allows us to share more fully in each other's humanness. I will now invite Sister Linda Kulzer to speak to us and to Mary Dell about why Mary Dell and her work are so important to all of us here. Linda has been the one, or one of several, I believe, who have introduced many of us to Mary Dell's work in the past, and now she will have the pleasure of introducing Mary Dell herself to all of us. And after Linda's remarks, I will make the formal presentation of the Lumen Vitae Award and will invite Mary Dell to speak with us. And I'd like to remind you that after the ceremony that we will all meet in the lounge, the art lounge, which will be given in a reception in honor of Mary Dell. So, Sister Linda, would you like to speak with us?
I have a habit of forgetting certain announcements that are of great importance, so I must make one immediately so I don't slip on that. We will have available at the reception some of Mary Dell's works. I think some of you have realized that our bookstore sold out on the works we had by Mary Dell, and we do have some more at the reception this evening. So some of you who are still looking for books, this could be one source of books about and by Mary Dell. Mary Dell's friends, Mary Dell's relatives, faculty and staff and students and friends of our college. For me, tonight is a dream come true. Tonight, all the persons associated with our college and all Mary Dell's friends and relatives gathered here have the opportunity to honor this very special woman. Tonight, I have the privilege to share my love and my admiration for Mary Dell with all of you gathered here. Over the years, I had often heard references to Mary Dell under promising titles such as Minnesota author, Minnesota activist and feminist. However, I remember very distinctly the first time I experienced the actual force of her gifted writing. It was during our annual Women's Week here in 1983 when on this very stage, Molly Culligan performed her stunning one-woman show entitled Ripenings. This show is an interweaving of the words from several of Mary Dell's works, most predominantly her novel, The Girl. I would like to ask Molly to stand up so we can thank her publicly for the gift she gave us that evening. Molly? I remember being deeply moved both by Molly's artistry and the unusual force of Mary Dell's writings. I recognized that here was a writer who could express reality, especially women's reality, with an accuracy and a sensitivity I had seldom experienced. After the experience of that evening, I knew that I would not be satisfied until I could read her writings and find out more about this woman who had captured the language of the Midwest and given a voice to the women who helped to settle this area. However, on that evening in March, I had no idea how truly rich that association with Mary Dell would become for me. I hunted down as many of Mary Dell's writings as I possibly could, and I became more and more amazed at the wealth that I discovered. I found that many persons here on campus were quite familiar with her works. In January 1985, when I was planning a baby shower for a friend, I asked Molly Culligan if she would come and perform the culminating section of her show, Ripenings, for our get-together that day. Not only did Molly agree to come, but she offered to bring Mary Dell with her. I could not believe my good fortune. I was to meet Mary Dell in person. I love to remember that afternoon as I watched Mary Dell watching Molly perform her works, her very words. At times during some of the most deeply moving moments of that play, I heard Mary Dell croon. One such time being the moment when, with support of women all around her, the girl gives birth to a daughter. This affirmation of life and humanity in the midst of abject poverty is an experience that brought most of us to wordlessness. We were reduced, or should I say, we were exalted to tears of wonder and of gratitude. In a postcard I received from Mary Dell a few weeks later, she commented on the experience of that afternoon, saying, "It was one of the most beautiful afternoons, like some kind of woman's summer. The tenderness and the coming child and the light from the woman carrying the child." Those of you who were here with us 2 years ago for the Bateson Symposium, we'll remember that we were pleased to have Mary Dell here with us for that event. On the last afternoon of the symposium, she was brought to the stage by popular acclaim. Sister Mara Faulkner recently described her presence with us in the following way. "She was the white-haired woman with the wise face who leaned on a cane and read, or rather chanted, her poetry, and soon had the whole audience chanting with her." Since that time, Mary Dell and I have continued to exchange letters and visits. I had the vicarious experience of attending the International Women's Congress in Nairobi through the vivid descriptions of that event I received from Mary Dell. Now that I've shared with you how Mary Dell and I and St. Ben's came together, I would like to say a little bit about Mary Dell's life and works. In addressing this area, I find two persistent ideas. One image that stands out in my mind is the lovely poster Gala Lint from our public information office, created for us in preparation for this award ceremony. On this poster, 5 different sketches of Mary Dell's face are merged into one illustration. Each of these sketches represents Mary Dell at a different period of her life. What occurred to me as a result of this illustration was the many different aspects there are in Mary Dell's life, the different ones that we might consider in order to really come to know something about her. The second idea that persists in my mind is a quote from Plato. He said, "What is honored in the land will be practiced there." I would like to combine these two recurring images, that is, the different phases of Mary Dell's life, joined in with the honor we want to give her in each particular phase, in the hope that we all can learn to practice those traits. The first period of Mary Dell's life we will look at together encompasses her birth in February 1900 in Murray, Iowa, and the years following, which provided her with such a rich variety of experiences on the prairies of Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas, and in addition, a move to St. Paul, Minnesota, all these taking place by the time she had reached her 18th birthday. These were wonderfully formative years for Mary Dell. She indicates that she spent much of her youth listening to the people of the towns she lived in, at times taking down conversations verbatim. In this first phase, we honor her sense of openness and wonder that helped form her attachment to the lands of the Midwest and to those who wrested a living from that land, particularly the women. The second period we will look at together might be termed her searching years. Mary Dell tells us her mother always wanted to be an actress, so she encouraged her daughter to go to acting school in New York. There she lived in a commune with feminist anarchist Emma Goldman. She was disappointed in the way women were exploited in the New York theater, and eventually she moved on to Hollywood to try the film industry. There she picked up bit parts or worked as an extra. She says of herself at that time, "You'd get about $25 a day, which was tremendous if you lived." Working conditions were horrible. Her first task was to jump from a burning ship into the water. She claims she almost was killed right there. Later, she became Pearl White's stunt woman in The Perils of Pauline. She says of this period, "I'd managed to make enough money to hole up and write." Going on to Sacramento and Berkeley, she married and with her husband headed little theater groups. During these years, she was already deeply drawn to writing and says, "Walking the streets looking for work in San Francisco, I began to write notes, my deepest feelings. I felt that I was not only writing my own deep roots, but the deeper life of all women." Her career as a socialist writer had begun when she was 19. By the time she was 24, she was writing regularly for the Daily Worker, and in 1927, her first short story was published in the Dial. In that same year, she was arrested in a protest march in San Francisco, demonstrating against the execution of Sacco and Vanzetti. It was during her jailing that she made a decision to have a child and to return to Minnesota and to devote all her energies to writing. We honor in the Mary Dell of this period her sense of adventure and seeking, her persistence in writing, and especially we honor her vote for new life in a period of her life when she admits she was deeply drawn to personal and cultural despair. The next period of Mary Dell's life begins with her return to Minnesota in 1928, the birth of two daughters, and goes on through the extremely active years of writing and speaking and being involved in political activities up to about the time of the Cold War in 1947. Her first major work, Annunciation, which she had begun in notes she made to her yet unborn daughter in 1927, was published in 1935. Mara Smith's review of it indicates that it shows a profound and passionate feeling of connection and union with all that lives and has ever lived. In 1939, she completed the first draft of her well-known novel, The Girl, a work which would not actually see publication until 1977. In 1940, she published Salute to Spring, a collection of her short stories recalling the politically active years of the 30s, made up of strikes and hunger and starvation. In the early 40s, she received a Rockefeller Historical Research Fellowship to write North Star Country, that wonderfully lyrical people's history of the upper Midwest. During this rich period, marking a high point in Meridell's career and reputation, we honor her faithful chronicling of the lives of the Midwestern pioneers, especially the lives of working class women and the realities of their life during the Depression. Around the 1947 Cold War period, Meridell moved into her dark time, a time of repression and neglect, a time when she suffered from persecution and the reprisals felt by many artists as a result of McCarthyism. She was cut off from public outlets and publishing outlets and hounded out of any job she could find, even waitressing jobs. At this time, she turned to writing children's books. She finished five of them between 1947 and 1954. After her mother's death in 1954, she wrote the book Crusaders, the account of her mother and her stepfather's life. At this time, she also became very interested in the American Indian. She spent time in the Southwest living with and learning about the Hopi Indians. We pay special honor to the tremendous resilience Meridell showed through these dark days. Nearing age 60, with no steady income, she took jobs in garment sweatshops for $1 an hour, was an attendant for women in the Minneapolis State Asylum, and even lived for a time in a condemned bus in Santa Fe. It is in the renewal of the 60s that we see the next period of Meridell's life. She began to do extensive traveling around the country by bus. She was a witness and a participant in many of the reform movements of the 60s. She went to Washington, D.C. to be a part of both the Peace March and the Poor People's March. She was in the People's Park in Berkeley and in Haight-Ashbury at its height. All this time, she was continuing her role as a writer. She was talking to the people she met, asking them questions and recording their stories. With the renewal and expansion of the women's movement in the late 60s, Meridell once again found new audiences for her work. In 1975, she published a book of poetry entitled Rites of Ancient Ripening. Here, we frequently hear her speaking in the voice of an American Indian woman. At this point, we need to include the actual publication of her novel, The Girl. She took up this manuscript, first drafted in 1939, and reworked it for publication in 1977. What we honor very specially during this period is Meridell's concern for women, for their suffering, and for their survival. In this present period of Meridell's life, we see Meridell's creativity continuing on unabated. In 1982, the Feminist Press published her book Ripening, a collection of selections from the major periods of her writings with a fine introduction by Elaine Hedges. An important book about Meridell was published in 1983, Neela Schluning's America, the Song We Sang Without Knowing, is about the life and ideas of Meridell Assur. We are very honored to have Neela here with us this evening, and I'd like to ask her to stand for a moment. Neela Schluning. We know that Meridell is working on a life of Robert Emmet. She continues to write poetry and is engaged in a long essay called The Origins of Corn. Parts of this essay were just used by Heart of the Beast Theater in a spring production. We also know Meridell is working on a cycle of novels. In this cycle, she is describing women's discovery of the bonds that unite them. What we would like to honor, especially in this current phase of Meridell's life, is her positive attitude toward aging and her unshakable belief in the possibility of new birth out of darkness. Her ideas on aging come through clearly in her frequent use of the term ripening. She herself says, "I'd prefer we take out the concept of old age and just call it ripening. You never hear of a sunflower getting old." In speaking of Mary Dell's unquenchable optimism, I am particularly struck that we are giving this award on the very day that we in the Catholic Church celebrate our beautiful woman mystic, Juliana of Norwich. Juliana assures us that in the end, all things will be well, and all manner of things will be well. This is a sentiment that pervades so much of Mary Dell's writing. Her words at the end of Molly Culligan's show, Ripenings, ring with this beautiful affirmation of life. The girl says, "Oh, it's good to live. You don't have to have much. Just to know each other, touch, sing, feel it in your breast and your throat." Mary Dell, we find so much to honor in your life. And we believe that the light of your life, your Lumen Vitae, will help all of us here tonight, all of us connected with the College of St. Benedict, to practice what we are honoring in you.
Mary Dell, the audience presented this to you. I was going to suggest that the award citation that I read before Linda's speech matched almost imperfectly with the beautiful tribute that Linda made for you. But we chose this symbol deliberately, a little crystal that catches the light and refracts it in many ways, and we think that it's the perfect symbol, we hope, for the kind of award that we wish to give you. But the audience gave you the award by their appreciation of your work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now we would invite you to speak with us.
Thank you, that's beautiful.
Thank you, I'm
glad
you.
Uh-huh.
You bet.
The earth is a crystal. I thank you all for bringing your energy to this wonderful salute to the human and to light. I want to thank the Sisters of St. Benedict, the conductors of energy, the invitation that you all make to love, the gatherers of human light and of the new age. To come here today through this green tide of a new spring to meet with you, to be with you, is to be honored here as we are all honored in making visible an energy in the human body, in the human community, a conductivity of the earth and the crystal of the earth and the blooming of a new humanity. There is always electric, magnetic, communal, tremulous conductivity greater than the atom bomb. It's in us. It's in the human. It's in the light. A fusion of light that is global. And from the bodies of millions of our comrades, of our sisters, of our brothers, the surviving light of the human energy. It's here in us. It's here tonight. I do not make a little of the great dangers upon this earth of the bomb and the arrogance of technology and the unforgivable vanity of lifting radium and plutonium out of the earth, out of its creative function to split and destroy the earth, or the deliberate creation of hunger and millions dead disappeared in mass graves, the proliferation of a terrible power of a trickster and the linear and Faustian consciousness. We know that the balance and justice of matter develops its opposite balance, its polarities. The consciousness of our civilization is linear and deathly and leads to the bomb and to death and destruction. Rationally, so-called objective science is manipulating explosions towards a target, towards a goal of destruction. But I say that there's another energy that is in us, that is a new reality, that is a global reality of the rising of the people of the earth, of the memory of the crystal of the earth, of the production of the earth, of the great love of the earth. We know there is no alien and separate object. We know there is no death at a distance. We know that is in us the reality of life, the assertion of life of the millions of the people of the earth. Last week there was a thing in the paper about conductivity of energy from material science, of an energy so quick and so instant. But Tesla, the great electrician, said that there was something that you passed from this ear, which went around the world and entered the other ear simultaneously, instantly. And I believe that the people of the world now convey this information to each other that is instant, conducted through us, through the body of our communality, through the reality of our being together. I've seen this. I went to Nairobi, and I saw 18,000 women gathered with this electromagnetic touch for each other. I call it information. Touch is information. The information of our infallible strength, of our indestructible life. We saw in the bodies of the Western and the Third World women the earth beauty and the flower and the herb and the great strength of love. Now I see you all tonight in a great light, and the global light of the earth, and a new dawn and a new reality of human life and cosmic light. We know that we are the conductors of matter, that the communal, indestructible galactic light of Earth and stars and human beings make us meet each other in this new global world, not in death, not in the graves of the massacres, not in the disappeared, but in the assertion of our human light, of our communal love, of our indestructible communality. So let us seek each other in the villages of the earth, in the root and the dark, where we live in the dust. Find us singing in the underground vein, the germinal seed in the returning sun, and bring our goodness to enormous, fertile, and perpetual harvest, toward zenith of noon, toward total expansions in crops of brotherhood and sisterhood. Let us await each other in the village field, in the new year, risen in ancestral dust from the furrow, from the loom of the people, where amid lamentations we have loomed our life in pollen, where the leaves forgive the root, and our children rise in perpetual sunrise, in immense globular light. We await each other. The light returns on no enemy faces, but upon the communal chorus, roused in villages of the earth to cry, salute, and sing, and shout in the choruses of millions, rising towards communications, towards extremities of nadirs, the total expansions in the entire solar light on all flesh, on all fields, and all villages, rouse us from sleep, rouse us, and let us seek each other and move from the violent, the broken, the predatory, to the enormous and myriad fertile and impregnated harvest, the global village, the global earth, to sing in choruses of millions. I seek and find you in the root dark, in the underground veins, the skeletal support of all leaves and some are forgiven, germinal seed and seminal child. Quietly between us, we have made the corn from windy grass to solid and bursting cob upon a stable plant. Amidst lamentations, wounds, separations, and lesions, continuously and massively bruised under the hooves of conquerors, we have loomed our lives. With the same passion of high corn, for the velocity of pollen spreading to all life, as an ally we come together in our villages, in the diurnal green of this immense spring. The leaves forgive the root and raise the fruit. I'm seeking you among the ancient stones, in the dusty faces, in the raised fist, in the resurrected heart. We sing together in choruses of a million.
Mary Dell, you continue to inspire us, and you will always be for us a lumen vitae, a living light.
Thank you.
And Mary Dell, I want to say for years I've listened to Linda quote Plato by saying, "What is honored in the land will be practiced there." And sometimes I encourage her to say that, but this is the first time it made utter sense, you know. So we invite you all to go to the lounge, please. Thank you.